He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.
Yes, and we went through a weather pattern over the last few days of finding snow up at the high elevations in our listing area, and not a lot of too dangerous driving I found as I was going through those areas on a number of occasions. But it does bring up to mind an early safety type of comment about making sure that listeners' tires have good tread depth and are in good overall condition for enduring winter weather that's coming. Tread depth is, I think, important in tires in any kind of less than ideal weather because in rain, tread depth allows water to be dispersed from the treaded part of the tire in an effective manner, and that reduces the likely chance of what we call aquaplaning, which is when the tire rides above the pavement because it cannot displace the water underneath it and therefore floats, so to speak, on top of the water like a water ski. In snow, the same thing can happen. Tread helps. It doesn't disperse the snow so much, but it does allow the tire to get down to the road pavement more concretely than tires that are heading towards the bald level of condition. So if you don't have snow tire treads and snow rated tires on your car, you should at least have all season or any tires that you have on the car have effectively good tread life left so that you get the maximum amount of braking capability and turning capability that they can offer you during inclement weather conditions.
Yeah, and also you want to check your tire pressures. I noticed in one of my cars where I have a pretty sophisticated tire pressure monitoring system.
Absolutely correct. Tire pressures go down in cold weather by approximately 1 pound per square inch of tire pressure per 10 degrees. So if your tire pressures are correctly set at 70, by the time you get down to 30 or lower temperatures, you've lost 4 or more pounds of tire pressure. And while that can make the tire contact the road a little bit more, it's still not a good idea to run with underinflated tires, especially if you're doing a lot of highway driving, because it can cause adverse problems inside the tire for later on in its tire life.
Right, and one thing I just want to ask is, you know, you've got some new people up here, and they're driving around in their cars, and they probably don't even know what kind of tires they have. So are the they tend to be SUV types, so presumably the tires on the cars are what they should be, but what's the difference between snow or all weather, or should anyone? I'm talking about the new lot, not your usual listeners.
Well, you know, there are a lot of people from the South where snow is not necessarily a common weather situation down there. I'm not sure what the vehicles that get delivered to dealerships in Florida have on their SUVs. Up here, the SUVs come with what I call all-season treaded tires in most cases. The sport versions, like the S-Lines and the M versions of the BMWs and whatever, often come with highway tires, and those tires are not really good. Do not necessarily have good rubber compounds for colder winter weather areas like we have in New England and the northeast part of the country, or even the northern part of the country. But so you're right. Many drivers may not know what they have on their cars, and they may not really care as long as they can go backward and turn.
Right. No, all I'm saying, though, is what should they do? Should they look?
Well, it'd be nice if they look. If they're listening to this show and they want to pay attention to what they've got, they should look and see what their tires are like and whether they are wearing evenly, whether they have good tread life left, whether they want to look on the sidewall to see what the designation type of tire is on there is up to them. I don't think they're going to really know a whole lot about it. So I leave it to their judgment, and if those people are listening on this show, to do what they think is necessary to see that they've got the right kind of tire on their car for winter weather, if they're going to be here through the winter time.
Okay.
I want to switch to the car industry situation. I hope Jay has some notes to talk about on that, but I visited a dealership in Connecticut town this weekend on a Saturday afternoon and was delighted to see that its sales department was in full blown busyness of in process of showing cars to people. And everybody had their masks on, salespeople, the people in the showrooms, but there were at least three salespeople occupied when I visited an Audi dealership in Connecticut, and I don't know whether it was that way all across the dealership board, but it shows that people are out there and looking at cars, and the industry is somewhat, I think, quite healthy at the moment.
The
Jay, you have some comments on that.
Yeah, it is. Sales have picked up. I think Toyota is producing more vehicles than they ever have before. So not only are we selling vehicles, people are buying them, but the supply chains seem to have gotten back to their normal production levels, and there doesn't seem to be all that many bottlenecks left. Although I was at a Volkswagen and Mazda dealership earlier this last week, and there are still they're selling every car they can get their hands on. Cars get off the truck and they fly off the lots within a couple of days. So yes, car sales seem to be robust, and the cars are trickling in. But and production is increasing again, and everybody's going to be merry ever afterwards.
And there seems to be plenty of financing in place. Or are you noticing that that people are? Is your sense that people are just going out and writing checks? Or
I don't know about that, but the car loan situation or loans availability for cars are out there in full force from both banks and from many manufacturers. I know Audi, for example, has a special interest rate program going, I think, through December 31st of between 2.5% and 4.9% for vehicles, pre-owned vehicles. I'm not sure whether it goes for brand-new ones. It may be for new ones, too. But again, as always, when you see low interest rate financing programs, no matter where they come from, only the top-tier credit scores people with top-tier credit scores are going to be able to have those the low end of the scale percentages offered to them for financing their purchase. And I do not expect that the majority of the listeners to this program are in that category, but we can hope that there are many of them that are. But the interest rates for car loans, for purchases at any rate, that's what I'm talking about at the moment, are probably, for the average car buyer, 4% or higher for average credit scores that are below 600. And I do not, you know, top tier is up between 700 and 900, apparently. And not a lot of people may be in that category to be able to get the best credit. But you still can divide the purchase price on the sticker label of a car by the number of years you want to finance, and before you know what the interest rate is going to tack on to it, you can see what the monthly payment will be, depending on how much cash you can put down, down payment you can put down on a car when you go to lease or finance it. Sure. Leases, by in most cases, require you to put a significant amount down in terms of a cash payment before you get those really low lease rates, and be very careful about how many miles a year you get in the programs that you see with very favorable financing rates and leases, because Jaguar, for example, offers low lease rates on many of their vehicles, and their programs in the fine print have as few as 5,000 miles a year included in those very low-end lease rates Jaguar models, which, because of their retail price levels, are already pretty high up the scale before or unless you were to try to purchase it and make purchase payments as opposed to lease payments.
Hey,
5,000 miles a year may well work down in Long Island and in Florida on the roads, but they do not work for country leases up in the northwest corner where we have to drive lots of miles between places over the course of 12 months. And you may get caught on a low mileage situation plan and have quite an additional amount owed per year or at the end of the lease, depending on the number of miles you have been able to limit yourself to or not.
Jay, what were you going to say?
Conform with the mileage rates, the miles that you're allowed in your lease rate, in your lease programs.
I just wanted to go on a slight tangent here and mention again, and we've talked about it, I think, in the past, Volvo's car care program. So you pay a monthly fee, it's more of a rental than a lease or a purchase, obviously, where you can swap cars on a regular basis. And their updated version of the program starts at just $650 a month and allows you to change cars every 4 months. And with a total miles that you can rack up of about 1,200 miles a month, which is, you know, the 14,000, 15,000 miles a year that seems to be the average number of miles that people travel, which is not a whole hell of a lot. But it makes me wonder how viable that program is, because $650 a month is not all that much money, considering it includes pretty much everything other than the gas you put in the car. But there it is, and it's worth looking into for those who may be interested in different Volvos, different seasons, for just $650 a month.
All right.
I thought I'd mention that. I just want to go back to the industry. And we talked a little bit last week or the week before, I can't remember, about Hummer and their $100,000 plus vehicle. And I'm actually comforted in seeing that I'm not the only one to think that their GM is out of their minds trying to market an electric Hummer. But there is certainly an electrification of all brands. Ford just announced they are coming out with a Ford Transit full electric vehicle. And it's more of a commercial application than anything else. They hope to sell fleets of vehicles that will do what we call last-mile delivery, you know, whether it be Amazon, UPS, or whatever, the home deliveries. But that seems to be the market for these electric vehicles. We know Amazon's bought a ton of ordered, 100,000 vehicles, 10,000 vehicles, I can't even remember now, from Rivian. Mercedes has an electric Sprinter in Europe. So there is a trend towards more electric vehicles. And, I saw a Tesla Y again last night, and it looked awesome. And I keep thinking to myself, why would anybody buy anything else in today's market? But that's just me. Also tested last week, had the opportunity to spend a couple of days in a Mazda CX-5, well-known little SUV. Had always read about it, that it's the sporty, zippy, zoom-zoom little SUV, and it truly is. It's comfortable. It rides well. It's not very powerful, but it's fun to drive, and that was a base model, and it did pretty much everything well, and I kind of liked it. So that's my few things for the...
As Jay has been saying, and I would like to chime in and agree, it's very interesting to see or go visit a dealership of almost any branded car and take any branded car out for a test drive and find that many of them drive in a very fun, effective manner. And as I have said on other shows, it is the dealer's job or the salesperson's job to try to not let you leave that particular showroom that you have gone in to test drive a car without hopefully signing a purchase agreement on a vehicle. Because you drive down the road to competitor number one, two, three, or four and take one of their cars out, and you're going to find their cars drive in very much a similar fashion to the first place you might go driving a car. Would you agree, Jay?
Yeah, I mean, most cars do drive well these days. The car I had was a loaner. I had it for 2 days, and I got to drive about 300 miles with it, so it was more than just a little test drive. I got to, quote-unquote, live with it for, like I said, a couple of days. But you're right. You go, that's what salespeople are going to do in dealerships, and it gets, we can go on and on about
We can, or I can interject for 1 second because we were talking about this vaguely last week because there are multiple ads saying, don't ever go to a dealership again. Just take the thing that's plopped on your doorstep. So how does that fit in?
Well, it doesn't fit in with my idea of going to purchase a car.
I understand.
I don't know whether it's going to ultimately take over the way cars are being sold to people. Sure, there's a population of people that don't care about the driving experience, the test driving experience, until it might be too late. I know a person around our nesting area who is driving a Ford Escape or a similar version of that, and she thought that car was pretty good. She then got to drive a vehicle that I own, a Jeep Cherokee, and she came back saying, boy, this is a fun car. I should have gotten one of these.
Okay.
That I should have gotten one of these
is
something that may come out in somebody else's life later on, but probably won't for the most part because people don't generally go and get to drive other people's cars or other cars during the course of ownership of something that they thought they loved when
Jay?
They drove off the lot with it.
Jay?
I'm sorry. I just think a dealership test drive is
I don't think Robin disagrees with you at all. I'm trying to point because personally, I have actual hands evidence. We went to drive a Honda a long, long time ago, and it was, it was just a behemoth, and B, the 2 second test drive. Robin was, we should go here. We should go here. I was like, I'm not buying this car anyway. Please, we can go straight back. But the point, all I am trying to say is that there is, in fact, a fairly robust. Hey, this car is better than that car. I'd like to see. Let me see what my options are. Life out there that can be lost by. Terrifying consumers into just pressing a button and ordering something. That's all.
Well, you have the Carvana sales experience where you pick up, you order a car from Carvana and it comes out of either a vending machine or out of a lot and they deliver it to your door. And I believe you've got a week's worth of test drive capability or you can return it for a credit of whatever you put down on it for another car in their stable.
But there are two bits of that. A, what do you have to compare it to? And B, and this is what I was trying to get to earlier. I want to go back to tires, actually. When you've gotten a car that way, do you even know where your car came from or what the tires are?
You can always know where the car came from because there's always a Carfax.
Okay.
And just go through the history of the car and you'll find out where it originated. And I think if you're buying a used car, and this is what I always tell people now, I'm going on another tangent. If you're purchasing a used car, go through the Carfax and try to make sure that the car does not come from Maine or Vermont or one of those states where they put more salt on the road than you can shake a stick at. And ideally, you want to, if you can buy a car that's lived down south, your car's life expectancy will be all the longer.
All right, and then we just need to throw in, how do you make sure that you didn't get a car that was in a flood zone?
They have a title, a salvage title, if they have been in a flood zone.
Okay,
That's pretty straightforward.
And flood zone, you know, could have been diplomatic for how do you know your car wasn't sitting.
Now, there are things, and I've said this before, if you look at Carfaxes, there are things such as a branded title, which raises all kinds of red lights and make it difficult to finance a vehicle. But those are not necessarily bad buys. A lot of times, branded vehicles are fairly recent, and they originate from buybacks. So BMW had a bunch of them a year or two ago where they had a major issue with a new car, and they could not fix it because they just didn't have the parts. And so they bought back the cars, and those cars are then retrofitted when the parts do come and put back on the market. But they cannot be, they have to be sold with what they call a branded title. But again, it does not necessarily make it a bad vehicle, and the market value is a lot lesser than a clean title.
You just have to know what you're doing. All right, in the final 3 minutes, who wants it, and what are we going to talk about?
So I want to bring up safety relative to roads and infrastructure, and just a little tidbit here. I don't know if you have been near Bark Hampstead Reservoir recently and seen the huge construction site at that what was a fairly dangerous stop sign. And I'm trying to think of what the two roads are. Robin, help me out here.
I know where you are, but I can't tell you the route numbers.
But
it is a dangerous. It is a dangerous.
Like,
are they trying to put a roundabout in, or what are they doing?
They're just reconfiguring that intersection, which has been a dangerous intersection for a very long time, where you come to a stop sign if you're coming from Winsted and going towards. We all go towards Bradley.
The airport.
Yep, and you get to that stop sign, and you have to crank your neck all the way to the right, and then say a silent prayer, and then hammer the
step on it
to get on. So they obviously are reconfiguring that whole intersection. And it's a major, major endeavor. But kudos. I don't know where we got the funds, but I'm glad to see that happen.
Jay, you bring up an interesting concept, which I think is a safety situation. I watch people trying to get on limited access highways, and everybody's got a fear factor built into their brain when they're trying to decide when to make that attempt to get in, to accelerate off from the online ramp, get into the line of cars in a crowded highway.
You know my theory on that.
You don't know whether your car has good acceleration or not, or you don't know how to time it, and you sit there with your neck craned leftward in most cases over your shoulder, watching for a gap big enough so that you think your car can get going. And I watched somebody holding up a whole line of cars as I was approaching them. And I said, oh, they could have gotten in that space because I could see where there were gaps in the line of cars. I was in the passing lane, and they have not been able to go. It is a very frustrating experience to have somebody who just doesn't know how to merge
accelerate
onto a limited
to the
access
speed of
highway.
Traffic. It's very simple. Accelerate to the speed of traffic. That's what you should do when you're merging.
Okay, that's actually, I'm going to end on that because that's pretty simple, and that will help a whole lot. He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.